Welcome to this episode of Noah Asked. While you are listening, I do ask that you refrain from doing anything that may distract you from this episode. Tasks such as, but not limited to, cleaning the house, driving, and falling asleep will not be tolerated. And now that we have your exclusive attention, enjoy this episode of Noah Asked about fine art.
Welcome. It's going to be a beautiful, lovely, surreal, peaceful time.
It's already surreal, man.
It's been surreal ever since you smoked that whiskey.
I almost choked.
There's no going back.
Just hanging out. I have... That was a real one. I inhaled wrong. I have a very small amount of whiskey to make it through the rest of this podcast. As soon as this whiskey's gone, I'm out.
This is a podcast about art.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I picked this topic was because we had talked about entertainment. And I was very restrictive in confining your creative knowledge.
What?
Because I was like, we got to talk about what's good to the people. What do the masses want? And you're like, no, I want to talk about that freaking aesthetics.
Damn right. I was fresh out of that aesthetics class and I was ready to use that useless knowledge.
And then I was like, hey, no, I'm going to make you wait a year. And then forget it all. And then we can do it.
Now we're on an even playing field because I've taken notes. And
Joey, you can't be smarter than me. That's my only rule.
I've taken notes and you have decided to not use your scroll. So finally.
We are on the same page.
Well, what have you done? Oh, no. No, you've spilled the breads in the studio. So Noah has very seductively...
toss the clean tissue on the ground.
Whatever. What is that what the kids are calling it these days? You toss a tissue on the ground?
Yeah, that's what the kids are calling this paper mache art that we're about to be talking about here.
Boom. Paper mache? Did you study paper mache art?
No. That would have been cool though. I just come out here with all my pinata knowledge.
You come out here with a pinata. You're like, here we go. This pinata, it can sell for $65,000.
Honestly.
Low end. Art's pretty cool because earlier we were looking at it from more of like a objective stance or subjective stance where it's like we applied these like things to it. I can't remember which one of those was.
We were putting objective rules around what art can be and like specifically setting these brackets of like, okay, what would make it the most popular? What would make it apply to the most people?
Mm-hmm.
What is like maximum entertaining output is kind of like what we were like striving for and like what makes something entertaining. But now it's like what makes something art and what makes something fine art? And where's the distinction and who's been involved with that throughout history? Just kind of our thoughts and general opinions. Do a little shallow dive through art here.
Yeah, this is more of like an opinion based Noah asked rather than, I mean, I guess we have like our opinions in the other ones, but like this one, when researching it felt really weird because it wasn't going through like numbers and stats and research papers. It was going through like opinion pieces about art and like talking about why art is important and what people think art does for the brain versus what people but it was all based on their own speculation and philosophy and not based off of
in a case study of 470 people, relatively small subject sample, we found, you know, yada yada yada.
It was kind of weird.
Something that I think really encapsulates kind of what I was talking about, the difference between entertainment and art, is a quote that I had seen by Nathaniel Hawthorne where he said easy reading is the hardest thing to do.
Okay.
Because he's a novelist. And so he's like used to writing these grand novels and like he knows all the tropes and he knows like how to subvert them. He knows like the meta things that he needs to do for other novelists to enjoy his writing. And so I think that's kind of the distinction between the entertainment that we were talking about and the art.
Okay.
Is because the entertainment is that easy reading, a person who's not accustomed to all these tropes and nuances, and they just feel like invigorated by all these different twists and turns that are par for the course for someone who's invested in the field and knows all the tricks of the trade. Someone who's like really invested in the field of whatever we're talking about, whether it's literature, music, film, sculpture, you know, things like that, they're going to be bored by those things. And so they're going to try and like subvert the already subverted into something completely different. And they're going to always be trying to push these boundaries and make something completely new. So I think that's kind of where the line starts to form. Are you working with the very clear-cut format of like sitcoms? Or are you trying to like break that and, you know, do some unique short film kind of stuff?
Yeah, like it's the difference between doing something that's Monet's like Lilies Under a Bridge. Versus doing something as abstract and contemporary as like a Jackson Pollock.
But when I was looking into like, say, Monet, he's an impressionist. Mm-hmm. And impressionists were like super frowned upon at the time because everyone else was doing realism.
Yeah.
And so he's out here just painting stuff that looks like he looked at lilies on a pond and they had to turn around and paint it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that he was doing something that looked like a blurred image of something you've seen once,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else was doing these like perfect realist anatomical models of people, like say like Da Vinci's like The Last Supper or Mona Lisa. Yeah. He is like being just like railed on because of his like lack of technique, his like failure to use proper structure and forms mm-hmm. and techniques.
Yeah.
And then so even something as small as just like making something a little blurrier was a huge deal in
art. Oh, for sure. Art. Like in the time and all that. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how that's aged too, because just like a side tangent that doesn't super relate, the New York Museum of Art, that painting, that impressionist painting of Monet that was so railed upon, was one of the top selling postcards and prints that they had in their gift shop.
Oh, really?
It's like this idea of beauty. And the thing that I was watching and the things that I was reading kind of about this were like kind of talking about why art was important to like the everyday person and not just like the critic, is because this idea of beauty, even if it is just impressions, people need that to distract them from the fact that there is so much going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
While there are other artists who might argue, it's like, well, you know, you're painting these things that are dreamlike and not real, and not necessarily like that they're surreal, but like so not detailed, it's so colorful. But look at the world around you. It's not realistic. It's mm-hmm. not what is there. And I think there's a lot that's important about like Monet and like impressionism in general. Not without getting to like art history lecture-y.
To be fair, we like both are not art experts by any means. Yeah. This is something that I was like, I think this would be a cool topic to research about. And we've researched it over the past mm-hmm. like day or so. So we're tossing out some of like the more art 101 terms, but neither one of us have like studied extensively like art history or anything.
Yeah, no. I took one class that was art history and I dropped it in the first 2 weeks. And that is what the viewer should understand going into this, is that that's what level this course.
Right.
Welcome to our Skillshare course about the first 2 weeks of art history.
Honestly. And I was just like, man, I do not really care for art. Mm-hmm. I can go to like the Nelson Atkins Museum and I can have a great time. And I'm like happy to like look at all the paintings and like look at some of like maybe the old armor and clothing pieces of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But like just looking at like the classical paintings and stuff didn't really do a whole lot for me.
Yeah.
But then I could go home and I could watch like the YouTuber Nerdwriter, and he would go in detail and start explaining certain paintings. And he mm-hmm. would go into like a whole video about Picasso, and then he'd go to a video about Rembrandt and things like that. This is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Man, the painting of Cronos eating his son Zeus piece by piece as
horrifying
he looks like
image.
It's literally like a terrified, like naked, like homeless-esque man just like gnawing on like a fully formed human mm-hmm. is this piece of art that's been made. And it's like supposed to depict Cronos eating his like babies. Whereas like when you just think about like, oh, I've seen Hercules. Like, oh, he just probably like pops a baby like a pill and it's a cute little animation. But this man depicts it as just like raw cannibalism.
Yeah.
And then also with like the perspective of like that was like in his dining room and mm-hmm. he like painted it on his wall. It wasn't actually on a canvas. He had just like built it into his dining room.
I didn't realize that. That's kind of messed.
It's dark. And just like, but then you learn about that and you're like, whoa, that's really interesting. Who was this guy? What made him do that? What are his other things? This painting has so much more context than this like dark, low res dude just eating another dude. Oh, wow. This is like Greek mythology in its darkest way. And mm-hmm. it can really like put a light and a perspective on these things. And so I was like, man, if this YouTuber Nerdwriter can really give me perspective on art, maybe all of this art out here that I'm just not understanding and I'm thinking is boring is just me being ignorant.
Yeah, I think that's kind of how it is with a lot of art, though. What makes it important, what makes it special, is the context in which it was created. You know, you could look at something like Monet's thing, like just bring that back and just be like, oh, that's pretty. Like, it's an all right painting of this or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and go away and never understand like Monet's history or like understand like, oh, well, he was making a statement with this piece.
Yeah. Oh, Monet fought in World War I mm-hmm. in the African Cavalry Division.
Yeah.
And he was so far away from any beauty for his like early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back home and he sees the beautiful French countryside and he's like, I just want to share this with everyone in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like,
this has so much more beauty and so much more of a statement to it.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, I think that's what's really kind of makes art valuable to me anyways is knowing the history behind it, because you can look at a picture or you can look at a painting or a picture of a painting and be like, oh yeah, I mean, like, it's nice. And I think most people take that away, but it's the people who study art and the people who like really look into these things. And that's like the importance of the little like black squares that are like next to the art pieces at museums.
Man, those are annoying though, when they just say like, this was the publisher or whatever. And you're like, yeah, I don't care who published it.
Like, no, I do want to know like this stuff about that. It's like going to like a regular museum and it just being like, this jacket is blue. It was made by so-and-so, by some company and this whatever. It's like, oh no, this was one of the jackets worn in the Civil War by this person who did this thing. Like, but instead you're not getting any of that important context that came with it. You're only getting, well, it was manufactured in London and in 1606 or whatever, you know. But yeah, like, I think that's like a big thing that brings art all together is simply context.
And in my research I found a way to like look at art kind of like a little checklist to help you kind of decipher what maybe is going on in this painting.
Okay.
And so this list by Evan Pushek, he was saying that the first step is like reaction. And so this is literally just you looking at the art. You just see what you see and you take a little time to like take it in, maybe like voice your opinion or write it down and kind of like work your way through the art and like see what you see.
Okay.
And then from there you can like look at the content and you can like piece out the things that are there. There's like, there's a building in the background. There's two women in the foreground over here. There's a man fishing in the center under a bright, harsh red light. Like, what? Okay, these are the pieces. Then after that is the form. And like maybe the buildings are perfect squares and made to seem like they're orderly and clean. Whereas like the fisherman is like dirty and made of like this real abstract form. Yeah. And so those can all have different meanings. And then the last two are historical context and personal context. So that's based on the artist and the time that it was made. And so through those five things of reaction, content, form, historical, and personal context, you should be able to glean a lot more from each piece of art that you look at.
Right. Yeah. And I think that way with most art is like just looking at the contrast. Instead of just looking at a piece of art and being like, oh, well, it's pretty. Taking it in those steps. And understanding like none of this was an accident, because I think that's something that a lot of people kind of forget, is that they look at it and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. They don't really think about, oh, someone spent 150 hours creating this piece of art. Someone spent, you know, a lifetime working up the ability to create the shadows in this way, like Rembrandt, or, you know, those kinds of things. And like really being able to like understand, it's like, oh, every single square inch, every single square millimeter of this painting was thought out. It was planned. It was not an accident. It can really help with that as well, just give you like some perspective, because I think it's pretty easy, especially in this world of instant gratification and technology, to just be like, oh yeah, cool, moving on. It's not a moving picture, it's just a picture, I'm just gonna, you know, keep going past it. It's like, no, someone spent a lifetime on this. Like, even if it wasn't like on this particular piece, it was on this skill, on this thing that gives it like this power.
Yeah. And I think a lot about what makes something art, what really makes something like a classic or something that pushes through to the future and like that people continue to look at, is like pushing those boundaries and doing something that hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
Your film school always talks about Citizen Kane, and I don't think you personally love the movie, but it did something cool where they like cut out the floor to be able to get a low enough angle with the camera that they had at the time.
Yeah, you saw a ceiling, which is something you never see in older films, because the ceiling was often non-existent. It was where they would put the lights and the mic and all of that. And yeah, it is interesting. It's one of those things that looking at them now, it's not as cool as it would have been looking at it in the year it was made. Because back then, oh, this had never been done before. We've never seen a movie that actually cut out the things that we didn't need to see. Like, we were able to mentally associate these two shots together without having to see the transition between them. And it's like one of the first movies that like cut all that stuff out. And I think art, like you're saying, does like similar things as it changes. It's like, oh, well, we're just going to experiment with these kinds of things. Something that kind of reminds me of is the change. And looking back, it's like, oh, well, this is just whatever. Especially when you look at contemporary art, where it's like, oh, this is like abstract and weird. Kind of looks like a kid painted it. Like, why? Why is it like that? Well, like, contemporary art is partially a reaction to photography, because photography already mastered realism. You could tell a whole story in a picture and not have to spend 150, 250 hours making like the perfect lighting out of paints and different
tones. And if you did realist art, then people would just probably be like, that's a bad photo, you know?
And like, not that it doesn't have value anymore, because I still look at stuff that people make and I'm like, holy shit, like that's insane. Like, I've scrolled by things and gone to people's profiles on Instagram many times because I was like, oh, I've seen this a few times. I didn't realize that that wasn't a person. Like, that's just a painting. So, like, contemporary art is a response to this kind of thing. Whether or not you love hyperrealism or not, let's just express things a camera can't express. And so we'll express emotions in an abstract way. And that's, like, when the rise of contemporary art kind of showed up. And you get things like Jackson Pollock painting with a violin and just, like, dealing with his own neurosis and emotions just being displayed on a canvas.
So a poet named John Keats coined a term called negative capability. I think it really plays into when you hear about artists that have severe depression or anxiety or addictions and things like that. And the definition of negative capability is to pursue a vision even when it leads to uncertainty, as opposed to seeking philosophical certainty over artistic beauty.
Okay.
So it's basically seeking out the uncertain, seeking out the different, going into the unknown, as opposed to just like making the thing that everyone's making or making the thing that you know you're comfortable with in hopes that you can find something different and like expose new light in the world.
Okay. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And so I think that has a huge part of like what makes something art versus entertainment, because I think entertainment is trying to capitalize on what's going on right now.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get the most people involved and trying to like be what everyone wants it to be, whereas art is seeking out to be that next thing. It's reactionary. Once things catch up to it, it wants to move on.
Yeah.
It doesn't want to be the photos when photos actually exist. It doesn't want to be impressionism when impressionism's been going on for hundreds of years. It wants to move on and change.
I think that all forms of art are that way. Like, even film. Like, not that film is always artful, but there like are artistic moments in films that are making billions of dollars, or millions of dollars, I guess. Not necessarily billions. You've got like art films and these like little things, and they're always trying to push the genre, trying to push what they're emoting to a new level. And I think that's like what makes art unique, is it's the only form of expression that changes. You know, like you've got math. Math doesn't really evolve. Like,
it grows. You can toss something on top of it, but it doesn't like change what's already there.
Yeah. It doesn't change everything that happens before it or the context of what happened before it because something new came up. I guess math could do this where it's like it comments on previous things if you want to think about it in that way. But what's really cool about art is like it can take an impressionistic element and apply it to surrealism, and it can apply that surrealistic art concept in an abstract way and take those things. And it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to try and recreate this form of art using cubism, and then the next I'm gonna take it and I'm gonna apply these other elements to it and just entirely change how it is. And that's kind of like what then goes into graphic design. Graphic design does that a lot, where it's almost all commenting on art that exists rather than necessarily pushing a whole bunch of genres forward. But I mean, it pushes itself forward. I think the like real art, quote unquote, like paintings and stuff like that really are able to just change how we see the world, regardless of if we want to see it perfectly like a photograph.
Definitely. Something that you're saying right now is almost something that like T.S. Eliot said. So he describes what happens when new art is created. It isn't studied in isolation. It's studied compared to everything around it. And the things that are around it subtly have to change because this new art is now affecting the genre. And this art is like subtly changing in people's minds because it's affected by everything that people have seen before it. And so the way he's describing it is that art is a living thing. And so if you imagine like the entire genre of impressionism is just a dog. And so it's like the genre of impressionism is roughly a dog at all points. But whenever you feed it something different, it's going to change it on a microscopic level. It's going to be broken down. It's going to be used for its pieces. And then some things are going to live on and become really important. Some things are just going to be discarded. But everything that you feed this genre is going to help it thrive and survive, or possibly like wither away and die.
Yeah.
But no matter what, everything that you add to it's going to change it. And so he's talking about looking at art as a living organism. When you have the idea of like, this is what an apple looks like, Well, you could do 100 different pictures of apples. You could do 100 different impressionist painting of apples and 100 different cubist interpretations of apples. Mm-hmm. And those could all line up to form one kind of amalgamous apple in the audience's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a really cool thing that like makes art what it is that it's not ever looked at in isolation. It's always looked at in context. And even if it's not intentionally looked at in, like, say, the artist context or historical context, it's looked at from you as even like an ignorant viewer, just from like other unrelated art that you've seen.
Yeah.
Or videos that you've seen or movies that you've seen mm-hmm. or even just like books that you've read about this piece of art. And so I think that's the really interesting thing about art is that it's really in the hands of the audience.
Yeah.
And the artist can have so much say based on like what they do. But once it's like out in the world, it's really up to the viewer to decide what they feel and how they feel about it.
Absolutely. Like when I took art classes and stuff, even if the artist was in the room, they were never allowed to speak during like the critiques and stuff and during the interpretations of the art. Because almost always, I'll say like 99% of the time, the artist is not there to like speak on it. The artist mm-hmm. cannot be there to talk about their own piece and talk about the opinions they're trying to convey with that. Their opinions are conveyed to someone who might just interpret it entirely differently.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that their interpretation is wrong. And it's just what this art means to me is based on your own personal context, kind of like you were mm-hmm. saying there. And yeah, it's alive. I think it's probably the best description I've ever heard for art as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's living. It's the whole thing. As long as humans live and humans are around to create art, mm-hmm. it's going to evolve. It's going to change. It's going to grow.
Yeah, and different ones are going to grow and be born, and other ones are not going to be fed and are going to mm-hmm. just like wither away, you know?
Yeah.
I do think it's really cool what you said about the artist not being there, because it is such a visual medium that even with all the context and like with the little placard on the side, that could make a world of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at a wall-sized mural of a Jackson Pollock or something,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to matter what his intention was or like what the placard says, because when everyone walks into that room, they're just going to look at it and think something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't take the time to like go up to everyone and be like, this is what it means and this is what it's about.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can do that, but that's not what the visual medium is about. You mm-hmm. know, that's not what painting is there for.
Yeah.
It's there to inspire something based on looking at it, not based on mm-hmm. reading a separate book that kind of applies to it.
You know? Yeah. And I think that's what's really interesting about like more abstract forms of art is that you have to learn how to read the language of it. Not that you can't appreciate it without it, but like before you can like really kind of understand what's going into it, it like helps to learn this language, which is why I think art and abstract art and those kinds of things are always put on like this pedestal where it's like, oh, this is like high art. Mm-hmm. Then you look at like films and like photography and it's like, oh, well, this is like a lower form of art because it doesn't require as much reading to come into it. It doesn't require mm-hmm. as much like knowledge on the subject to understand the words, quote unquote, that are being conveyed to you. You know, you're looking at a Jackson Pollock or you're looking at a Picasso or you're looking at any of these other things and you're like, oh, to the common person, it could be weird. But if you just stop and go through like those five steps that you mentioned, if you stop mm-hmm. and you like really kind of think about how like every piece of this is not an accident, how every piece of this has meaning to the person who made it
mm-hmm.
and like apply that to yourself, like you can really find yourself lost in an art museum.
Mm-hmm. It is really interesting how art is like so deep and like worth the deep dive, but is almost like meant to be taken at such a surface level at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
And how those are like super juxtaposed positions,
yeah,
but also equally valid. And I think that's why there's distinction between like decorative art that like looks nice to anyone. And you just like look at like the Three Sisters Mountains, like mm-hmm. printed on a landscape, put on a wall. Like everyone's like, oh, it's a mountain. It's pretty.
Yeah.
But then you get to something that in the art world is, say, like a 12th grade reading level, and it has like a bunch of nuance to it. And it's like, okay, well, this was made in the Impressionist time, but it's actually an abstract piece, which was like really important for its time. And it's using like mirrors of other things in the image, which mirrors have never been used in art before, and just like mm-hmm. things that like a normal person wouldn't know.
Yeah.
And are very valuable to like understanding it, but not necessarily valuable for enjoying it for a certain subset of people.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like it's valuable for the comprehension, but not for the leisure or like the pleasure of the viewer. Because yeah, you can just look at something and appreciate its beauty without understanding what it has to mean. And I think there is something inherently beautiful about that alone. Just like the fact that we are human and we don't have to understand everything. Because I feel like a lot of times that's one of the problems with people getting into fine art is they feel bad for asking questions. They feel bad for doing these things because they're like, oh, what if everybody else already knows this thing that I have a question about? I don't want to seem stupid. Well, in fine art, while the community can be like very like gatekeepy like that, I think there's nothing wrong with going into it and not knowing a damn thing and just being able to appreciate it for what it is.
And I feel like everything in art is so subjective that even the simplest questions can have value in the most complex situations. And where you can go in and look at like a master Da Vinci painting and be like, why did he like do his brushstrokes this way? And I don't think anyone would be like, oh, this is obvious. They'd just be like, oh, because the limitations at the time, or he's trying to prove a statement of this, or this was specifically his style. Even the basics to every single artist is so important that asking those questions makes a huge difference, even on someone who's been working for 60 years.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Art in general.
You know, something I was kind of impressed by, I was looking at some of like the big famous artists, like the Picassos, the Michelangelos, the Da Vincis and stuff. They all lived to be real old.
Yeah.
The first one I looked up was Van Gogh, and he committed suicide at 37.
Yeah.
And then like everyone after that was like over 60.
Mm-hmm.
In like the 1400s too, in the 1500s, in the 1800s. Picasso died at 92. I think Michelangelo was 88. Old people. And I was like, what does an artist have, you know? And I think part of it might be like the low stress like lifestyle. And I guess saying that in the simplest terms feels wrong because, like I said earlier, they are seeking out the unknown. They are kind of like living on the fringe of like what's acceptable. A lot of these artists have to like push to get like these things that they're doing accepted. So I don't think it's a low stress lifestyle, but I think it's a lifestyle dedicated to them and to their passion.
I was going to say, I think that's like a big part of it is like that's a lifestyle where you're living for yourself. You're not living to like please like the man or whatever. You're literally putting all of your emotions into the art. Like part of why they live so long could have like to do with like the fact that some of them were able to find like fame and fortune throughout like doing works and commissions, but also they just discovered art therapy before before art therapy existed.
Constantly able to express themselves. People around them were probably able to understand them better and communicate with them a little better because they could see their art and understand at least pieces of what they're trying to convey.
Yeah, and they were most likely able to understand themselves a little bit better too. And like, it's really interesting because people love, like for Picasso, for instance, love to look at his paintings and be like, oh, well, this is weird. I could probably do something like this if I really tried. It's like, yeah, I mean, maybe. But you look at Picasso, it's like he didn't only do his like shapes kind of things and like the misforms. He could do like amazing portraits.
Oh, and like Picasso was one of those people who did like, he had like eras of his life. I know you talk about like the blue era, the rose era, the cubist, the surrealist. And like he was an artist innovating before other people were even catching up to what he was doing.
Yeah.
Everyone goes through phases in their life, and he was living so much for himself that he was able to like see that and not be weighed down by like, oh, this thing is successful. This is what people like. No, I am moving on because I feel different now, and this art doesn't feel true to me anymore.
Yeah, and I think there's really something to that, just like the therapy and just creating something, even if it isn't like particularly an art piece, but like being able to express yourself in a way that isn't purely through like spoken word or purely through like writing something down, being able to like express yourself in a way that is just beyond words. So in this case, like, you know, like art, you know, and that's like the whole thing behind contemporary art too, is that's expressing emotions. They're just expressing it in a different way than Picasso or Rembrandt or Michelangelo ever had the ability to.
And maybe why some modern art doesn't like feel right or make sense is because, like I said earlier, that like living organism that's being fed and changed constantly doesn't have a long history that, say, Impressionism does.
Yeah.
It's still a little baby. You don't know what its personality is yet. And so you don't know if it's going to like thrive or if it's going to like peter out. And so when you look at something and you're like, what is this splatter style art, or what is this like iPhone art or something that people are doing?
Yeah.
It doesn't have that context yet. You haven't built this image as like an individual yet. It doesn't have context yet. And so it can be a little harder to enjoy and understand for everyone involved, even the experts.
People are slow to change, man. They're slow to accept things that they don't understand.
Definitely.
So yeah, that can be like really tough.
Yeah, I know a lot of these artists, like, either they weren't accepted at first or they were never really accepted for what they did. Mm-hmm. And that's, like, the whole struggle with Van Gogh is that he just was always seen as, like, a manic, angry, tortured artist at the time.
Yeah.
And didn't really have anything to offer to the fields. But then later on, people just, like, saw the tortured artist part of it and saw more of the artist to him and were able to, like, appreciate, like, where all this art was coming from and look at it from more of, like, a mental health standpoint.
Yeah.
And looking at the emotion inside of the painting as opposed to, like, the realism that mm-hmm. everyone else was doing and how there was no heart and soul in that art.
Yeah.
But his was just only heart and soul, and no one was seeing it, and so he felt unheard, felt depressed.
Sad.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting, like, these artists can never know fame in their life, then mm-hmm. like, find it afterwards. It's almost like them not being around is what makes the art more powerful. That seems obvious when you, like, when I say it out loud. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, well, they're not around. It's more valuable because they can't make it anymore. It's almost like their voice not being there to speak for it
mm-hmm.
allows for more personal suggestion, like, when you're looking at it, and for more connectivity. And then mm-hmm. once you learn more about his life, you can understand, it's like, yeah, like, these are beautiful paintings, but they're not beautiful paintings for the sake of being beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful for the sake of his sanity. Like, these are the things that kept him alive and kept him going as long as he did. And then, unfortunately for him, like, you know, things didn't pan out. He didn't get the help he needed.
Definitely. I think when we talked about entertainment, we were talking about, like, relatability and trying to, like, imprint yourself into the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very similar with art, where without someone there to, like, tell you what they thought or force their opinion on it, you're able to put whatever story you want onto it and whatever makes it most interesting to you.
Yeah.
And so in a way, it's, like, less cohesive and the art takes on way more meanings, but that also means it can apply to more people.
I'd absolutely agree. 100%. Art's cool, dude.
Art is cool. And, like, I don't know, studying it was, like, really fun and enjoyable. And I feel like I can now enjoy even art that I don't fully understand. I can, like, be better at trying to figure out mm-hmm. where they're coming from and what it means.
Yeah, you start to understand why people spend, you know, multiple hours, like, inside of an art museum and only ever get through, like, a portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can get lost in these paintings, get lost in, like, what they mean and what they say.
But I don't know if I'm ever going to be a fan of, like, abstract art. It's a little too much. I'm like, man, this person's made out of triangles.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that's kind of important to note, I think, though. Like, not all art has to speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can find a specific style that specifically speaks to you.
Animated cartoons.
Yes.
Give me Gravity Falls. Give me Adventure Time.
I mean, that's art, Atlas. Too. Like, that's all, like, art. It's not on the same, like, medium at all as, like, Rembrandt, but it's art in itself, you know. It is wild to think that people look at comics and so many people don't consider that art.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's so much art that goes into that, so much technique and passion and, like, sadness and joy. But also, I think when looking at art, it's important to maybe take into account that not all art has to speak to you, because not all art is for you, you know. Mm-hmm. This art wasn't made specifically for your type of person. One of the things I found that was really interesting was saying that people are drawn to art that brings balance to their life. People are drawn to art that, like, maybe contains the serenity that they can never find in their day to day, or maybe mm-hmm. contains, like, the high life that they can never obtain, or, you know, those kinds of things, or has, like, the nature scenes that they can never see because they live in a city.
Mm-hmm.
People are drawn to the art that, like, helps them feel like more of a balanced person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really cool, because in my experience, it's kind of true. It's like, I'm really drawn to art of places that I can't be at this moment, or mm-hmm. I'm drawn to art of worlds that I could never visit, but I love the writing for. And that stuff's, like, really cool. It gets, like, more, not like sciencey or, like, real, like, theory, mm-hmm. but it's just an interesting way to look at how people interpret it.
Definitely. I think people come in looking for art for different reasons, whether it's an escapism or to appreciate, like, bold colors. Plenty of reasons to see the skills of different artists and, like, really see
mm-hmm.
what people can do and really see the talent that exists in the world. And a lot of people are looking for a lot of different things in art.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of to wrap up, one other thing Nathaniel Hawthorne said is the object of his art is to increase the audience's appetite and appreciation for complexity in the world. And so I think that's a much broader term of kind of trying to find your balance or mm-hmm. looking for an escape or things like that. But it's just finding the complexity that you don't see in your everyday life and mm-hmm. adding it into your life and helping you grow. And I think that's what we're talking about with pushing boundaries and things like that. It's yeah. just art is supposed to like be helping the audience grow, helping the medium grow, and helping society grow in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought that was really cool.
Artists just do it in different ways. I don't have to type up a blog or make a zine.
Or do a podcast.
Or do a podcast. That's how we change the world around us.
Honestly.
Kind of. I don't know if we change the world. We affect a part of the world. It is changed because we exist.
But even if we're in a weird like meta way, we could be our own audience.
Mm-hmm.
Us talking to each other is then us able to vocalize and really solidify the opinions that we have like studied and learned
yeah.
over this time. And so even if no one's listening, we're an audience for each other. Mm-hmm. And us doing this research for this podcast changes us and therefore changes how we interact with the world and could change other people's lives too.
No, this podcast has definitely changed me. We kind of talked about it in like the season 2 wrap up, but it's just like, mm-hmm. just like, oh yeah, this podcast has really kind of like kept me on my toes. It's like makes me go and do research, makes me kind of continue learning about the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
Which if you also like doing, you should consider following this podcast and rating it 5 stars on iTunes so people can, I don't know where this voice came from, but
send
you know,
us love,
send me love, because good Lord knows I need it.
Honestly, humorish .tm at gmail.com. Is that right?
Yeah,
it was right.
It was just so much pot. Like you guys don't get to see it at home, but Noah literally froze in place. Like
did a little 360 like head rotate around and was like, what is it? Is it a dash? Is it a dot? Is it a space? I don't, emails can't have spaces. Dots.
His face became a loading bar, a buffering screen, if you will.
Just suddenly morphed into an apple for whatever reason. Yeah. It was really confusing.
No, thank you guys for listening to this show and listening to this program. Email us at that email if you have any love you want
send
to
us send, topics. Send us love. I don't know though questions and check out Spectacles.
Spectacles is a brand new show. Maybe not brand new by the time this show comes out, but it's a brand new show.
It's a show.
It's a show at least that's on the Humorish Network. That's right, baby. We're a network.
Not
we're really.
Making the bank.
It's just another show that I'm on. And
it's another show that abuses Joey for his skills, talents, and time.
Thanks,
Joey didn't
everybody.
Want to sleep anyways. Thanks, everybody. Sleep. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Noah Asked. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you learned something along the way. Our intro music was Farewell by Maya Beldsman and Matan Efrat, and our outro music is Scene River by I Am Daylight. Next week, me and Joey are attempting a new podcast. It's a movie review podcast about all the classics that everyone has to see, but we never really got around to. In this podcast, we explore if these classics are really worth the watch, and what made them so famous in the first place. So if you want to hear about our first episode, Back to the Future, check us out next week on TLDW.